I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
I'm Alexander Chester, and I'd like to get forgiveness and sex, but I'll settle for just one of them.
And I'm Ovsenensky, and the prostitutes don't seem to mind my scruff.
Welcome back to Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. And today we're here to talk about Season 1, Episode 4, The Bracelet, which originally aired on November 5th, 2000, 2 days before the infamous 2000 U.S. presidential election. So, Av, this episode starts with an activity that you're usually doing on a Sunday, which is watching a Jets game.
Yes, every Sunday I sit down, I get on the phone, and I watch the Jets, and I talk through what's going on with the Jets with someone on the phone, which I think based on later we can assume that this is Richard Lewis, but we don't really know for sure.
Yeah, now there are a number of issues with the football game, both on this night and then the next night that Larry's watching. We already had hashed this out on email with listener Amir. I'm not sure if the listeners really want us to spend half an hour complaining about this, but suffice to say that nothing on the television screen for either of the football games makes any logical sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first night, he clearly is watching a Jets game based on what his conversation is, and there is a team on the screen that looks like it very well could be the Jets, although maybe it's the Eagles. It's not really clear. There's an announcement.
It's either the Jets or the pre-1995 Eagles, because it's sort of a light green and white.
Yeah.
And they're playing the Vikings, by the way.
Yeah, so I wasn't even sure about that. I thought it looked like it could be like a Bears jersey, but
I thought it was the Bears at first also, but when you zoom in, it's the Vikings.
Okay, fair enough. And, you know, the play-by-play announcer, which I assume was dubbed in later, specifically talks about Testaverde and Larry's yelling out about Vinny, but it looked pretty clear to me like the quarterback in that game was wearing number 14, and Vinny Testaverde wore number 16 for the Jets. Neil O'Donnell did wear number 14 for the Jets, and he was the quarterback a couple years earlier, so that would make sense if this was like footage they had gotten from not very recently, but maybe a few years ago, and they just kind of like assumed. Yeah.
But listeners should be rest assured. We went into great detail looking at this up. I looked up every single game ever between the Vikings and the Eagles, the Vikings and the Jets. What we know for sure is that this video and the audio you hear are not from the same game. They were dubbed in separately. The way that Larry talks about the games clearly has nothing to do with what's going on screen. And we never found out where the video is from. We speculated it's from a preseason game or something like that. There's definitely no regular season game it could have been. But it's just we can't even be sure at all because they're playing on a field with natural grass and with a dirt infield. And neither the Jets, nor the Eagles, nor the Vikings have had such a field at any time in a game against each other.
Yeah.
So,
and I also like he throws like a screen pass to a white running back wearing number 30, it looks like. I couldn't tell if it was 30 or 38, but I couldn't find anyone in recent Jets history at that point, like from the 90s, who fit that description. So I don't know what's going on. That would be consistent with preseason, where you have like more just like random players that don't eventually make the team and then wouldn't be on the rosters that you could look up nowadays.
Yeah, my best guess ostensibly is that it was a preseason game from the 1980s that was played on some neutral field somewhere.
Right.
If I had to guess.
Yeah, they also, the first play we see, the Jets are on the 35-yard line and they complete a pass, get two first downs. He's also very angry about the clock running, even though the Vikings have clearly gotten an offsides penalty, so the clock should have stopped. And then, like, on the next play, when by the time Cheryl comes into the room, which, you know, is when the episode starts in earnest, they've somehow gone all the way back to their own goal line. So,
yeah,
you know, they clearly just took, like, a few random plays from some random game and just strung them together in a nonsensical way and hoped that two idiots 30 years later or 20 years later wouldn't be breaking down the film. But
yeah, and I think the lesson is it's probably hard to get NFL rights.
But they were wrong because there are two idiots breaking down the film 20 years later, and that's their problem.
Yeah. So as you said, so he's watching the game, talking on the phone with someone, presumably Richard Lewis, but we don't know who it is exactly. It's a Sunday night, one can assume. Cheryl walks in with a suitcase back from visiting her mother in Tallahassee for 4 days. The first thing I thought is curious is how they say it's her mother, because as we're going to see just in a couple of episodes, her parents are still married. We'll meet them very soon, so I'm not sure why he'd be visiting only the mother. But the second thing, which is 1,000 times crazier, is Av, would you ever not pick up your wife from the airport and you not see her until... Now, maybe because you have little kids at home who are sleeping or something like that, but like if there was no one else around that you had to watch, is there any scenario where your wife would land in your hometown, would have to take a cab or something back from the airport, and would walk in the door not having seen you for 4 days, and you're sitting on the couch watching TV?
I mean, I think nowadays, yes, and maybe maybe I'm the asshole here, but I think that, like, my opinion in general, and I would say this goes both ways, is, like, getting an Uber at the airport now is, like, so easy and, like, not that expensive that... like, that's more a better allocation of the couple's time and resources than one of them circling around and sitting at the airport, which could take 2 hours. It's like the worst thing in the world is picking up somebody from the airport. It's like, it's a fate worse than death. So it's like, you should avoid it at all costs. So I think in that scenario, if I was the one going on a trip, I would never in a million years expect my wife to pick me up from the airport. I would say, you do whatever you want. Like, I'll just get an Uber as soon as I land. And like, because like, flights get delayed.
But I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about her landing. Would she be of the same opinion?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because Dr. Jen would rather me cheat on her with a syphilitic prostitute than not pick
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I mean, airport. I think being picked up at the airport is just not convenient for either party. I just really do. I think that it's just like, it's, you feel guilty that like somebody's waiting for you and like you're waiting for your bags and then like they move the gate and like you can never find each other. I just, you know, I always thought it was like one of the big ironies of American history is that basically until 9/11, you wouldn't have to do that. Like you could go into the airport and like you would pick up the person from like the gate, but like after 9/11 you couldn't get through that barrier, so like there was really no way to coordinate that. But like thankfully at like that exact moment in time, everyone in the United States for the most part got cell phones, and then like you were able to more easily coordinate like in the street or outside the airport. So it's just like one of these like miracles of life that like those two events happen simultaneously. But like, because imagine trying to pick up somebody at the airport without a cell phone now. It would.
Well, I know because I lived not at home for high school. And so I'd fly back and forth frequently. And yeah, you had to coordinate ahead of time. All right, I'll be waiting at this exact spot at this exact time. And if anything changed, it was impossible to know.
Yeah, so.
And also, it's not like you could check on the flight, like if the flight was late or early, that you couldn't check that on the internet.
Exactly, yeah. It was, yeah. So, it's a miracle that anybody ended up getting home from somebody picking them up in the history of airlines and for that, like, six-month period.
Yeah. All right, so when Cheryl's trying to talk to Larry, he keeps stealing glances at the TV. You know, as we said, what he sees on the TV makes no sense. But ostensibly, according to the narrative of the show, it's the last 2 minutes of the game, and the Jets are trying to drive for some kind of game-winning or game-tying score, presumably. But anyway, Cheryl's trying to talk to Larry about her little nephew, Griffin, who hurt himself, but he's very distracted, Larry is, and so Cheryl finally angrily says, go watch your game. He promises it's the last 2 minutes, and he'll be right up. You know, I think we've all been in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very common occurrence. Obviously, with the development of like DVR and other technologies now, this shouldn't happen.
You could pause the game.
There's no time urgency the way there was then. But like back then, it's like if you missed it, you missed it. And whatever Cheryl's stupid story about her nephew can wait. And that, you know.
Yeah, if Cheryl comes home with like emergency information, that's one thing. But this is just like chatting about her trip. She just wants to do like the big catch up.
Yeah. Now, you know, presumably, you know, if Larry was like, better suited to handle the situation, he would have like said something like, hey Cheryl, like I can't wait to talk to you and hear about your trip, but like there's 2 minutes left in the game, can you please let me see the end of the game, and then like you know you'll have my attention for an hour uninterrupted. And maybe that would work, maybe not, but certainly better than what he did.
Yeah,
although
he doesn't even try.
But like I'm sure I've done exactly what he does hundreds of times, so I'm not one to criticize.
Me too. Yeah, Larry also hasn't shaven in the 4 days since Cheryl's been gone.
Yeah, he's letting,
so he has a little bit of stubble.
He's letting himself go a little bit, I guess. He doesn't, you know, have that Cheryl there to kind of keep him in line about his physical appearance. So,
yeah. So the game ends. The Jets, I can assume, lost. Larry goes upstairs to Cheryl, who's angrily reading a magazine in bed. And, you know, again, the smart move for Larry would be to immediately transition back to, you know, tell me about your trip. But Larry is a little bit clueless, and so he just starts talking haphazardly about how he heard that too much soy makes your brain shrink, which worries him because he's been having soy with his cereal every day for 10 years, and he doesn't know if he can switch to milk. I thought it was kind of weird that he refers to it as soy versus milk as opposed to soy milk versus, like, just milk. But
yeah,
anyway.
And I'm surprised that Larry David would have been, in the year 2000, such an early adopter of soy milk to this extent.
And it's been 10 years, so he's been doing it since 1990. Yeah, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, that seems crazy. Larry David does not seem like the type of guy who's, you know, super an early adapter of like these like dietetic trends.
But anyway, Cheryl's not responsive to the soy conversation. Larry gets into bed, and now he tries to ask Cheryl about her family and her trip. Cheryl's sort of, and we've all been there again, sort of the angry one word sarcastic responses. She's not really interested in the conversation. So Larry finally apologizes for watching the last 2 minutes of the game when Cheryl got home, but she's even too angry to engage with him now. and Larry is sensing rancor. Or is it rancor? Rancor?
It's either rancor or rancor.
Yeah. He knows how to spell it, but not pronounce it. Cheryl says she doesn't know what to say to Larry right now, so he proposes, I forgive you, let's have sex.
It's a good starting point of the negotiation.
Yeah. I've actually tried that exact line before. It does not
yeah,
succeed.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. Then he says he'll take either the forgiveness or the sex, which I've also tried. He then tells Cheryl that if she was watching the Oscars, this is an exact conversation I've had with my wife many, many times. You know, if it was the third quarter, I'd give you 15 minutes easily, but it was the last 2 minutes of the game and they had the ball on the 35-yard line. The bottom line is they go to bed angry and unresolved. So that's the end of the evening in the Cheryl Larry household. It appears as if we had neither sex nor
forgiveness. Wouldn't think there either. Certainly there was no sex. Maybe there was some light forgiveness, but doubtful because he, you know, the next day he's still thinking about ways to patch things up with her.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Larry's in his office. It's the next day with his assistant. She's upset with Larry because he hasn't shaven and he's wearing old clothes. He admits to her that Cheryl isn't talking to him. He explains why. His assistant says he got to give her a gift. And he mentions, well, there's a bracelet she likes. Platinum and diamonds, so he's going to go get it for her. And Cheryl's assistant is very happy to vicariously live through Cheryl and be married to the you know, the guy who's worth $500 million and can buy you a platinum and diamond bracelet just for forgiveness.
Yeah. I thought it was
he walks to the jewelry
store. I thought
store.
It was a great line where she says, like, oh, that's it. That's the solution. He's like, yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah. It's, you know, Kobe Bryant, what do you have, a $4 million purple diamond once upon a time for forgiveness? So although I think Larry's crime is relatively... less offensive here. But anyway, so he walks to the jewelry store and a homeless man comes up to him to thank him because Larry had given him his leftover chicken on another
or
day.
Did he?
Yeah. So you're implying that the homeless man is delirious? Delusional?
No. So this is a, from what I can tell from a little bit of research I did, this is a continuity error. This is something that's going to happen in a later episode. And they...
So that's good because I remember this happening, but I'm like, but I don't think we've seen this yet. So I was a little confused about that as well.
Yeah. I think the events that he's referencing happens in episode 7. And for whatever reason, they then reordered the episodes out of chronological order. So that's why it's confusing.
Okay. So anyway, but the jewelry store employees through the window see the dirty, unshaven Larry and the dirty, unshaven homeless man. And so even after the homeless man goes away, they refuse to unlock the door and let Larry in, despite his protestations that he wasn't, you know, with the dirty homeless guy.
So I mentioned this to you offline. I don't know if you noticed this or if you agreed once I said it to you, but one of the two workers in the store there, and both of them are not credited, so I could not figure out any way, but one of them to me looks like exactly like Susie Essman, just blonde.
Are you implying that it's Susie and Wick?
Or a sister or something? I have no idea. I was very confused. To me, she looked very similar to her. I'm not always the best at like the lookalike celebrity game, but if any of our listeners are, you know, want to spend 5 or 6 hours doing a deep dive and figuring out who this woman is, you know, you should go ahead and let us know because I spent about.
I saw Susie Essman at the premiere of season 10, and I should have gone up to her and said, "In season 1, episode 4, was the woman of the jewelry store you in a wig or a relative?"
Andor, yes. Susie Essman also looks a lot like there's a realtor in my neighborhood that most of the people use when they're buying houses.
Like a lot of women that we know.
Yeah, but like she's like very similar to this woman. They have similar personalities. Obviously, Susie is much more exaggerated.
How does this woman have a business?
She's a very tough woman and gets stuff done. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. Okay. Did you use this woman as a realtor?
We did. Yeah. She was successful. She shares certain personality traits.
Listen, you four-eyed fuck, you're going to sell this house to the Sinetskys right now.
Pretty much, but like, you know, less vulgarity, but same tenor.
Interesting. Now, I actually have my parents like to tell a story about one day in June of 1983 when my mother was like 9 months pregnant with yours truly. And it was like obscenely hot. And so they were wearing like raggedy, sweaty, like just like clothes. And my mother was very pregnant and they looked sort of, it was like a Sunday afternoon. And so they weren't dressed up. And they walked into some store and they were trying to buy something and they were thrown out of the store for not being appropriately dressed. And the moral of the story was don't judge a book by its cover because they were so upset they went next door where there was like a Steinway piano shop and they bought like a piano, which has, you know, been the piano in our family home for the last 37 years. But they, you know, I remember hearing the story as a kid, like this apocryphal story about why you should never judge, you know, someone by how they're dressed or how they look. But yeah, obviously the jewelry store makes a big mistake here because Larry David has deep pockets.
Yeah.
But
you know.
Now Larry goes out to his car, and this is where he starts to make very strange decisions.
Yeah.
So he could have gone to the car, take out his cell phone, and he starts to dial. And then before he finishes, he stops a stranger and asks him to do him a favor. He says, if a woman answers the phone, hang up. But if it's a man, give me the phone. Because he explains he hates his friend's girlfriend. Now, first of all, he could have done the same thing.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense.
Right?
He doesn't need a third person to listen to hear if it's a man or a woman.
Yeah. It's weird enough that the guy does it. But also, like, he can just call the store and say, like, in a rational voice, like, listen, my name is Larry David. You know, I invented Seinfeld. I have $500 million. You know, I'm sorry. I'm dressed a little scruffily. I'm happy to slide my credit card under the door if you want. You know,
or,
he could have tried calling them.
Or even, here's the number. You can charge it, and you'll see, and it'll be bought.
Yeah.
And then you can let me in to just take it because I've already paid for it in full. Yeah, there are better solutions than what he does.
There's a million other things he could do. But yeah, so he asked this stranger. Anyways, of course, he's calling Richard Lewis, so I guess he's still dating. If not Sophia, then some other girl who, you know, Larry hating Richard's girlfriends is a trope throughout the series.
Yes.
And he asks Richard to come down to the jewelry store to help him buy the bracelet. Now, couldn't he have his assistant do this? Isn't that what her job is?
Yeah, there's a lot of better solutions here than what he does, but, you know.
Couldn't he even have his assistant call the store and, yeah, just wrap it up and, you know, he'll go shower. Anyways, but the point is, you know, for the narrative of this episode, he needs Richard to come down to the store and help him buy the bracelet. So he waits. Richard arrives. Larry tells him he looks like a Jewish Ratso Rizzo, which is the Dustin Hoffman character from Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, and as we know from The Pants Tent, both Richard Lewis and Larry David are big Dustin Hoffman fans. They went to see the new Dustin Hoffman movie. Not quite together,
true.
But not quite apart as well.
Yeah, in the same theater. Have you seen Midnight Cowboy?
I saw it earlier this year, or last year. I saw it in 2019.
Yeah. I saw it. I did not think it aged.
Yeah,
well.
I didn't like it at all.
It's very slow.
I did not like it at all. It plays that. There's that song that it plays, and it plays it like 11 times in the movie.
Yeah. That's what it's most famous for, I think.
It's
John Voight before he became like
he was
a crazy
he was
person.
Very good looking young, which I wouldn't have necessarily expected based on how he looks now. But it's I didn't really particularly like it. It was very controversial at the time because apparently it was X-rated. Because I mean, X-rated meant very different things than it does now. But I think it's the only X-rated movie to ever win Best Picture.
Oh wow!
So or one of the only, but it's I thought it was a weird movie. I did like I've been doing a Best Picture catch up project over the last year.
I didn't even know it won Best Picture.
Yeah,
I that must have been why I saw it, because I made a point of seeing it. You know, when I was trying to cover the gaps in my film history as well, and I remember just being
very bored. It was the 1970 Best Picture winner, but yeah, I'm not a fan of the movie.
Yeah, so anyways, Larry thanks Richard for coming, and Richard tells Larry that's the first thank you Larry has given him in 2 years.
Well, you haven't done anything to thank me in years.
Yes, exactly. Now, Larry tries to explain to Richard how to identify the bracelet. Why can't Richard and Larry just walk over the 5 feet to the, you know, to the window and actually point to it?
Yeah.
Or why can't Richard walk into the store and say, hey, this is for my friend right there. You know, I know him. You can let him in. Again, there's a million other ways that this could be resolved.
Yeah, but, you know, they need the story to unfold the way they need it to unfold.
Yeah. Anyway, now the store is closed for a few minutes by the time Richard approaches the door. So Richard says, can they go get lunch and then come back? And then Richard proposes they walk to the restaurant because of his cardiovascular issues. He has 25 relatives who had heart attacks. You know, he starts his litany of complaints he always has. You know, it's interesting how much walking and talking is done in Curb. Like, that's obviously a very big thing in New York City, but you really don't see that a lot in L.A. But in Curb, you do, because they sort of need it for all the run-intos that happen on the
show. Yeah, I mean, L.A. is not a walking city the way New York is. Everyone drives in L.A. Everyone has cars. Everyone has more than one car. Richard actually specifically says, let's walk like the way we used to do back in New York, to which Larry says, I never used to walk in New York.
Yeah. Now, Larry picks up the tab for lunch, and Richard thanks him without protesting, despite us discovering in season 10 that this actually never happens between the two of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
They have a long-running feud about Richard always prepaying and, you know,
right.
Beating Larry
the
punch,
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah,
so, you know, we'll say that's the second biggest continuity error of this episode after the specific events that we see that didn't occur until 3 episodes from now.
Yeah. Well, and also all the football stuff. But yeah. So anyways, at lunch, Richard and Larry are discussing why women aren't into sex as much as men are. A very woke conversation. Larry's theory is that the penis is grotesque, and a woman is only willing to have sex with a penis if they love the man to whom it is connected. Anyways, Larry signs the check for lunch, and he notices that in addition to the line to tip the waiter, there's a line to tip the captain. Now, in season 10, we'll learn that Jeff is offended by even calling a pilot a captain. So I'm sure that Jeff would not be enthused to know that a restaurant maitre d' calls himself a captain. But that's neither here nor there. So Larry and Richard have a whole debate about who the captain is, how much of a tip he deserves. Larry says, well, he ordinarily tips a waiter 20%, so in this circumstance, he's going to give the waiter 30%, which will allow the waiter leeway to share that 10% with the captain if he wants. This makes no sense, what Larry does.
Yeah, I mean,
he's going to be over-generous with the waiter. Why would the waiter know, even think, that, well, this guy intended for 10% to go to the captain when there's a line right there?
Yeah.
Or he didn't communicate very often.
Yeah, I mean, you have two choices here. If you think this whole captain thing is bullshit, and then just don't tip the captain. I mean, that's your personal choice, but then just still tip the waiter the amount that you were going to tip. Or just say...
It's a lose-lose for
Larry. It's lose-lose, correct.
He's paying extra money.
Correct.
But he's not going to get the benefit of having done so.
Exactly. So...
As we'll obviously discuss.
Either don't tip the captain at all, or tip the captain. Don't tip the captain, through the waiter as a conduit. That doesn't make any sense.
Without communicating it to anybody.
Right. Yeah. Why?
And he puts the line through the captain's line, to emphasize this is not for the
Yeah. And, the waiter's supposed to know, oh, this is Larry David. He normally tips 20%, but he did 30% today. Obviously, the extra 10% is supposed to go to the captain.
Yeah. Anyways, as they walk back to the jewelry store, Larry complains that next time there'll be lines on the receipt for the lieutenant and for the colonel. As they continue walking, they pass a blind man who stops them and asks them to help him move some boxes into his apartment. Richard explains to the blind man that he also has problems. He's a recovering alcoholic. He has intimacy problems. Richard reassures the blind man, I'm a liberal. anyways, Larry is guilted by Richard to join as they walk to blind Michael's apartment to help him move the boxes. What Michael described as moving some boxes basically gradually becomes sort of step-by-step setting up Michael's entire apartment. By the time they're done, they're both exhausted and sweaty and gross. And I guess we sort of, we are led to, I think as we're watching, we assume, oh, I see what's going to happen. They're going to go back to the jewelry store. Now they're both going to look all, schleppy. But my favorite part is they get into a fight about bringing the TV back into the living room because they'd previously taken it into the bedroom. Anyways, the bottom line is this takes a long, long time. And as they walk back exhausted, they complain that the blind man was very deceptive. He tricked them into setting up the whole apartment.
Yeah, I thought that was a very ironic choice of words, given that, as you know, there's a prohibition in the Torah about deceiving someone, and the metaphor it uses is putting a stumbling block in front of a blind man is the way to use that, a catch-all for that entire body of things you're not allowed to do. So the idea of a deceptive blind man is ironic.
Yes, the blind man put the stumbling block in front of the
exactly. It's nice, to see representation that, blind people could also be assholes.
Yes. And I think I was actually just – did you watch the show Rami on Hulu?
Yes.
So the character who – I forget his name because, I didn't see it that recently. But the character who plays his friend who's disabled was talking about how he enjoys that he gets to be an asshole on TV also because, he doesn't want to be seen purely as a sympathetic figure. And so he has a very questionable behavior with a underage girl in the show. And so blind Michael here is a little bit deceptive, as we'll see. Anyways, by the time they get back to the jewelry store, it's closed for the night. Larry goes to the window and shows Richard the bracelet, which he could have just done in the first place. And Richard says, well, you helped a blind man. Today was a good day. Every day's a good day. Larry calls him Norman Vincent Lewis, by which he means Norman Vincent Peale, the author of The Power of Positive Thinking.
Yep.
Norman Vincent Peale, on his Wikipedia page, it actually discusses him going by the incorrect name on this episode of Curb.
Oh.
So Curb got the name wrong for some reason. Anyways, Larry tells Richard that he's he's a babbling brook of bullshit.
Yeah.
Which, now that I think about it, is how I should have started this episode.
Richard Lewis also says that he has more serenity than Larry, which is a good Seinfeld use of words.
Yeah. Serenity now. All right. Larry's home again, watching football while talking to Richard on the phone. Now Larry's talking about it's the Giants and why they shouldn't punt at this late stage in the game. First of all, kudos to Larry for being more forward-thinking than Richard Lewis. Obviously, you shouldn't punt. But we clearly see it's the same Jets and Vikings on the screen. The two teams we saw playing yesterday, why they'd be playing again the next day doesn't make sense. Why Larry's talking about the Giants when he was a Jets fan yesterday doesn't make sense. We're not going to get into that whole thing. We discussed that already. But I will say this. We know that it's the same day as the attempt to buy the jewelry. First of all, Larry's in the same outfit, but also in the conversation on the phone, Larry explains he came home. He's on the way home. He stopped and got roses, and so he and Cheryl made up. Richard asks, well, if you made up, then can I buy that bracelet for my girlfriend? And Larry says, yeah, I already made up with Cheryl, so that's fine. Larry complains about the Vikings running the ball, saying that his team is idiots. Now I'm very confused. He was a Jets fan, then he's a Giants fan, now he's a Vikings fan. None of it makes sense. Anyways, Larry asks Richard if he picked up his credit card at the restaurant because Larry doesn't have it. So Larry basically realizes he left the restaurant. He left his credit card at the restaurant from lunch earlier in the day.
Yes.
Now Cheryl comes home, and Larry interrupts the game demonstrably to focus solely on Cheryl, and he spends time talking to Cheryl about her NRDC meeting, and he maintains eye contact with her. He doesn't even acknowledge the football game. And Cheryl, for whatever random reason, she now mentions to Larry that she wants that bracelet she had seen a couple weeks ago, which is fortuitous to Larry because he thought about buying it for her, but of course he didn't. So he explains to her, you know, I actually tried to buy you that very necklace today, but I couldn't because the store was closed. And now I can't because I showed it to Richard Lewis, and he just asked if he can buy it for his girlfriend, and I said, okay, quote, because we've already made up.
which Cheryl seems confused why those two things are relevant, that now she doesn't get to have a bracelet just because they've already made up, and she has a fair point.
Yes. Now, of course, she didn't know that that he had been intending to buy it for her as a result of the fight that they had had, which if she knew that, I guess would incentivize her to get in more fights with him. Not that she needs incentive. Anyways, but she's very annoyed. Why would Larry think that? Because they made up. She didn't want the bracelet. And she asks Larry to call Richard to say he wants it, but Larry doesn't want to have that phone conversation because of the risk of the girlfriend answering the phone. So he says, don't worry, I'll wake up early in the morning, I'll beat Richard to the store. And this does have echoes of, you know, trying to beat Richard to the restaurant
in
season 10 to pay the bill. Because Richard likes to show up to places very, very early.
Yes. I do wonder, so I guess we don't really know for sure, but I guess we can try to infer based on later discussions. Like, at this point, if, like, Larry's like, hey, like, I need the bracelet, like, you only know about the bracelet because you saw it with me, and you asked my permission for it, so obviously you think that I have dibs on this bracelet. You know, Richard should just, like, let him have the bracelet.
Yeah, it would be an asshole move if Richard's not let him have the bracelet. But that's the tug, the sort of the pull, the push and pull of their relationship, I guess. So it's the next morning, and Larry's up early, showering, shaving, getting dressed in a suit. He wants to make sure he has no hiccups in his outfit when he goes to the jewelry store. Cannot risk a repeat of yesterday. Cheryl is really excited to see how handsome Larry is. How well put together he is, yes. And Cheryl tells Larry that the restaurant just called with his credit card, which actually is a little confusing. I don't know what time it is, but presumably it's early because Larry wants to get to the restaurant and then the store before it opens. I'm not sure how early this restaurant's opening that they're already calling.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And when you get there, there's no, like, they're not serving customers or anything yet. So, yeah, it's strange, but whatever.
Yeah. So he explains to Cheryl he doesn't need her credit card. He's going to pick it up from the restaurant on the way to the jewelry store. As he walks away, he gets to the restaurant. He picks up his credit card. We see a short man walk by and give Larry a dirty look. And moments later, Larry approaches the parking lot to see a car blocking his in. And so he comes back to the restaurant where he discovers, of course, that the car blocking his belongs to Perry, the captain. And so now Larry and Perry are going to get into a conversation.
Yeah, so he goes back and he's like, hey, can you move my car? You're blocking me in. And of course, because this can't be a normal person, it has to be a curb person, he starts lecturing Larry about, you know, why didn't you give me a tip? Was your table okay? Was the lighting okay? You know, usually people tip the captain or the waiters for that. Larry, you know, plays dumb, or not even plays dumb. He actually says what he intended, which obviously, as we explained, is a stupid thing that he intended, but his heart was in the right place, that, oh, didn't the waiter pass along your pro rata share of the tip? And no, of course he didn't. And this guy is like, you know what? You're going to have to find another mode of transportation, which, again, obviously, totally insane, complete overreaction. Like, yeah, so a guy snubbed you of, what, $4 yesterday? So now you're going to, like, he's just blocked. He can't leave the restaurant now. His car is stuck. That's crazy.
Yeah, very similar to last episode, how Brian acts in the car, where he says, you know, next time you'll bend over and pick up the ball. That's sort of Perry's attitude.
Yeah.
Here, screw you. You made the slightest slight to me, and I'm going to go over the top and be a curb person, as you so aptly put it. So Larry has no choice but to sprint to the jewelry store. And as he sprints, as he gets there, he sees Richard slowly walking in from the other direction. And so Larry and Richard start to fight in the vestibule to see who will get in first to get the bracelet. And of course, the store's employees see these two men fighting violently, and so they won't open the door to let either of them in. And that's how the episode ends.
Apparently, real life Larry David broke his glasses and possibly broke his finger in this altercation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
So Richard fights.
So there was some real life results of fighting.
Now, I just read a profile of Larry recently where his glasses, which have now become iconic, he's been wearing the same glasses since the 90s. Now he has dozens of copies of them, but I guess he needed them because he breaks them when he wrestles with Richard.
Yeah. I was saying recently, this weekend, a friend of mine got new glasses, and it's very jarring whenever someone gets new glasses, that there should be like a Megan's Law for when you change your glasses, where you need to like send out notification to everyone you know with like a picture of your new face, like 2 weeks in advance. Like, you're not allowed to wear them in front of people until people are on notice that it's a different face.
But only for glasses? Shouldn't this apply to like facial hair changes, coloring your hair a different color?
I think for
you know, getting a toupee, like there's all
for me, glasses is the one that like I'm always like, is that how you always look? Something's off, but I can't tell what it is. And then like eventually I realize it's the glasses, but then it just still never sits right with me.
All right, so who's your come with guy for this episode?
I think it has to be Blind Michael.
Oh, wow. I think this is the first time we disagree.
All right, well, that's interesting. Yeah.
To me, it's Richard Lewis. Every day's a good day for him.
Yeah, fine, fair. But yeah, I just think that the blind man scene was, I thought, like the funniest part of the episode in terms of just like how it keeps escalating and becomes more and more ridiculous. And they at no point do they feel like they can say like, fuck you, look, you're an asshole because he's blind and he just like has them over the barrel. Like, if it was literally anybody else, they never would have agreed to go in the first place. And if they did, as soon as like he's like, oh, I want you to do a second thing, they would say, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. What's your ranking for this episode?
I did not think it was a very strong episode. I didn't think it was like particularly funny most of it. And as we said, like a lot of the storyline just like doesn't really make any sense. There's a lot of decisions Larry makes that don't make any sense. So I'm going to give it 2 out of 5. Pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you exactly. Pretty, pretty good. I think it's the worst episode we've seen so far. And, you know, again, season one is not the strongest of seasons. The show definitely gets better, you know, similar to Seinfeld and a lot of other shows, I guess, as it gets its footing, as it learns more about its characters. I didn't love this episode. You know, we have an introduction to Blind Michael, who will, you know, have a larger role in the show. But we didn't really have any other exciting introductions the way that we had, you know, in previous episodes with, you know, with Ted and Mary, for example, or with Richard himself, or even a character in with the Bob Odenkirk character, Porno Gill. He may not be a continuous character in the show, but at least he is really a dynamite, memorable character. I'm not sure if Blind Michael is that, although, you know, he'll get to have a broader role in a way that the Bob Odenkirk character doesn't. Should we go to our mailbag?
Yes, we got...
And our tweet bag. We got tweets as well.
Yeah, we're getting hit from all over now. The first comes from Claire. She writes first about last week's episode, Porno Gill, on the topic of shoe removal. She says she was surprised to hear that it's so common to take your shoes off in people's homes and started wondering if it's a Canada versus U.S. cultural difference. According to a very helpful Wikipedia article titled Tradition of Removing Shoes in the Home, which has sections describing shoe removal customs all over the world, this is indeed the case.
Now, we should also note that in the 32 fans patron group chat, this led into a ferocious discussion on our podcast last week where people were... It's not just that people have different opinions, but people are shocked that there are other opinions on this matter. And the Canadians especially, Canadians are very strict about shoe removal, it seems like.
Yeah, and I guess people suggested that like in Canada, there's like more snow and like it's more of a, you know, probably like more rural areas where you're more likely to like have like mud or dirt on your shoes. So like, whereas New York is maybe more urban central. I don't know if that's actually true. It sounds right, anecdotally at least. But yeah, it's obviously there's a cultural difference between the countries. I know very few people who have a shoes-off policy in their homes. I always respect it when they do, but it's not common, and it seems like it's much more likely other places. Claire goes on to say, the bracelet was probably my least favorite episode so far, so it sounds like she's on board with what we kind of said, but it cannot go unmentioned how both Richard Lewis and the captain at the restaurant had such fantastic neckties. I did not notice that, but we'll take your word for it, Claire.
Yeah, I have to go back and look at their ties again. Richard Lewis, I never like how he's dressed, so...
Yeah,
but give it another
well,
try.
It came up in a...
He wears black, like Johnny Cash.
Yeah, it came up in like two weeks ago. But Larry asked him, like, why are you still dressing like that? And he's like, well, people have a certain expectation when they see me. He's like, no one gives a shit what you wear, Richard. Like, you're doing this for yourself. Okay, then Zach Brooks tweeted at us saying that he thought that the episode The Bracelet had serious Uncut Gems vibes to it. I don't know. I guess there's a jewelry store involved, but I don't think it really had the... It certainly didn't have the the frenetic pace of Uncut Gems. Yes. And then he asks, how long is too long to wear workout clothes? I sometimes end up wearing them all day if I'm too lazy to shower. I mean, that's too long. You shouldn't wear your workout clothes all day if you've worked out in them. I mean, I assume we're talking about if you've worked out in them. If you're putting on clean workout clothes, I think it's fine to wear them all day if you're not really leaving the house.
Yeah, although I do know the one thing he's talking about, when you come home, if you don't shower right away, if you wait half hour to do something else, then you're sort of like no longer sweaty, and then you sort of feel like, you know,
right,
like, oh, well, now I can go another couple hours.
Right, you settle in.
So I know what he means a little
bit. But you,
but yeah, but I try and get them off right away. I try and jump in the shower and get them off right
away. But of course you can't shower right away because then the shower doesn't take. So, you know, it's a fine line. You have to wait till, like, you're done sweating. Otherwise, you get out of the shower and you're still sweating.
Yes.
All right. Next email comes from listener Amir. He asked the same question we did. Why did Larry need the guy in the street to simply listen whether Richard or his girlfriend answered the phone? He didn't even have to say anything. Larry could have done the just the same. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And it's weird because they probably had to, like, pay that guy to be in the episode. It's very strange. Is it safe to say that Michael is the blind man from hell? Is that a reference?
It's a good
reference. What's that reference to? I don't even recognize that one.
Larry will later be at lunch with Richard Lewis, and they're at the lunch from hell, and then Richard will claim that he invented that expression.
Oh, okay. Larry's watching two nights in a row, as we discussed, but looking at the screenshots, it seems...
Yeah, we don't need to get into that.
Amir says this was pretty lazy.
Yeah, I do like how Amir commented in the emails that at one point he was going to start doing all the research about which game this could have been, but then he thought, fuck it.
Chester sounds like Chester work to me.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
Okay, next email comes from Olin Allen. Hi, guys.
Our super fan,
Olin Allen, had a very relatable moment early in the episode where Larry is feeling rancor, see, I know how to spell it, coming from Cheryl. About 2 hours before watching the episode, my wife came in while I was listening to the previous episode of your podcast about Porno Gil. She was telling me about something or other, but I was distracted by the podcast. It was nice to have a relatable moment so soon after. Still, I think I wasn't as in it as Larry was when watching the football. Also, I love the...
You also want to be careful. You don't want to say to your wife, I'm watching Porno Gil, because that might go the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
No, it's a Larry David episode.
You're listening to a porn podcast? It's not a porn podcast. It's a podcast that has a character that used to be in porn.
Yeah.
He loved the complaints about clock management. It reminded him of Sundays in the 32 Fans WhatsApp group. He said that's one of his favorite shared experiences, watching football and complaining about professionals' inability to manage the clock. He asked, do you think it was a little bit disingenuous of Larry making that he didn't care about the game at the second day since it wasn't even the Jets? So maybe he was like overplaying. Oh, I don't see. I'm not even care about the game. When you don't really care about the game, except I think from the earlier scene, it seems like he is invested in the game. All this talk makes me almost forget about Blind Mike, which is a great part of the episode. I feel that being happy to portray people who are blind or have another physical attribute that doesn't fully function, be an asshole, humanizes these people. I agree. Yeah, that's what we said.
Yes.
I don't feel the episode is saying all blind people are assholes. Certainly not. But they could. That would be a hot take. All blind people are assholes.
Yeah.
But they could just be as much as anyone else, exactly. Rather than patronizing, having to always shed them in a good light. Also reminded me a bit of Ted Danson's sitcom about the 90s Becker that had a main character who was blind. Anyway, I may just lean to Richard Lewis ahead of Blind Mike as my main star man. That's what you said as well.
Nice.
Olin agrees with Alex. If only for the way his sweet-soaked face looked when they finished up at the apartment. he says it's a strong episode, 4 pretty goods out of 10, which is a different scale than we're using. Because he says out of 10. I don't know if
4 out of 10 is 2 out of 5.
Yeah, so I don't. Yeah, Olin, we're doing pretties out of 5. You give it 4, but then you said a 10. So, but you said strong episode. So I'm gonna assume he meant 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Boy,
good.
10. I don't think Larry's ever got even more than 5 or 6 pretties.
Thanks for the feedback, Olin. I'm glad you liked the episode. And when your wife is talking to you, maybe put us on pause, or maybe invite her to listen to you to the podcast. You know, this is the only way that we're always looking for more listeners. All right, and
it's a wonderful podcast for a boy or a girl.
And our last email comes from The Fades. He says, guys, when you go to the episode recap, I expect a short segment. But in reality, the whole pod is the episode recap with your great commentary and insights interjected. Can you refine this somehow so as to match my expectations with regard to what a recap should entail? I love the pod. I don't really understand what he's talking about. but it ends with I love the pod. So I think we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
Okay. Maybe he can come on one time and tell us exactly.
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
What
maybe
we
a demo.
How to rectify.
Yeah, a demonstration might be good.
Yeah. All right, Av. So next week we have episode 5.
Yeah.
And it is called Interior Decorator.
Yeah, so, you know, he's going to see an appointment with his doctor, and he's supposed to meet up with Diane Keaton. I actually just saw Diane Keaton. I watched The Godfather 2 last week. It was
pretty, 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 pretty good.